You're listening to American Songcatcher, tracing the roots of American music from its cultured past to today's artists playing it forward. I'm folk musician Nicholas Edward Williams. In honor of the 35th annual Merle Fest coming up this week, we proudly present the second episode of our off-season series, Local Focal, featuring a relatively unknown live recording from May of 1989 of North Carolina's own roots music legend, Doc Watson. Doc was invited to perform for a historic concert series called Over Home, which originally aired on WNCW Radio in Spindale, North Carolina, between 1988 and 1990. The recording was done on cassette, and what you're about to hear is unlike any other episode that we've done with American Songcatcher. You'll have a front row seat to a very unique listening experience where Doc tells stories and sings the songs passed through his family. Only this time, he was asked not to play guitar until the very end. Here's co-host Sheila K. Adams introducing.
And now, folks, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our special guest from Deep Gap, North Carolina, Doc Watson.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope you all aren't too disappointed with my effort at this. I've never done a storytelling set before in my whole life. The man books it, and he says, oh, you can do it. Only that ain't the way he said it. There's some children here. I'll not say what he said. I don't know, after that song about the old devil taking the old lady to hell, I might as well say anything I want to. Well, first, I guess there's quite a few folks here hadn't met this ugly thing, so I'll tell you. I was born in what at the time they called it Stony Fork Township. It's the Deep Gap area now. I was born in 1923. My grandfather and grandmother were Carlotta Carlton and Smith Watson. Grandpa was born in 1853. And my grandmother was 4 years younger than he was and died in 1939. And my father was born in 1891 and he died in 1949. And I grew up in the, remembering back to when I was little, in the edge of that old time era when they still had wagons and oxen and horses. And I meant to say a minute ago that if y'all are expecting a lecture of some kind, because I've been all over the country and picked in different parts of the world, well, I know four or five of those big words, but I don't know what most of them mean. So I'll have to just be me, like if you were in my living room. My grandfather said when he was about 14 years old, my great-great Uncle Luke came along. I'll tell you a little bit about Uncle Luke in a minute. And he wanted Grandpa to go a bee hunting with him. I'll explain what a bee hunting is. They'd find a bees drinking at either a stink bait course where there was nitrogen in the earth where animals had been or whatnot, or at a water course where there was water. And the bee will kind of follow the up and down lay of the land, and they'd sight that bee out as far as they could see him go and take a line of sight by a tree, and then they'd go up there and watch him another piece. And they could find the wild bee tree. If they traced him far enough, they could find where the tree was, and they'd most of the time, they save the bees as well as the honey. They'd hive the bees and take them home, set them up on a little bench in a homemade hive, and take the honey out of the tree and have that too. Well, it was a kind of a lie that my great-great-uncle Luke told my great-grandfather, Tom Watson. He said, I want the boy to go bee hunting with me, but there was two bear cubs in a big hollow tree. There was two big trees, and there was a fork you had to climb up in to get to where the mama bear had the cubs in this huge hollow chestnut tree. And he told Grandpa, he said, "Now, Smith," he says, "I'll stay down here on the ground with my old flintlock cocked and primed ready, and if the mama bear comes when the cubs start squealing, I'll shoot her. I won't let her up there." Well, Grandpa said he was scared till his heart was a-flying, but he went up there, and he got the first cub in the big toe sack, big old oat sack, and he was getting the other one, and it was really raising Cain and putting it in there, and it bit him one time, but about the time he got it in the sack, he said he heard the ivies and brush a-breaking, and he looked, and here come the mama bear. And Great Uncle Luke, he comes up with that old flintlock, and when he pulls down on that trigger, it don't fire. Grandpa said it scared me so bad I just sat down. I don't know how I ever held onto the mouth of that sack to keep the cubs. And he said, "Uncle Luke threw that gun aside, and there was happened to be a long flint rock laying on the ground with a good handhold on the end of it. And when that bear started to rear up on that tree, he jumped astride her back and hit her a big lick in the back of the head with that rock. And when he did, she kind of sank down on the ground, and he just kept pounding. Because by that time, the little dog that Uncle Luke had run in, and the bear was trying to get hold of it. And he hollered, "Damn you, you won't kill my little dog." And he hits that bear four or five more licks, and it gives down on the ground. He knows he's got it killed. And he finishes crushing its head. Looks around, and the little dog has hold of one of the tendons in the bear's hind leg, just a-shaking with all power. Didn't even hurt that dog. Couldn't even get a hold of it. It was so small, I guess. Grandpa said I was so scared he had to help me down out of the fork of that tree. Grandpa kept his cub a while and sold it to somebody from a circus, and Uncle Luke, I don't know what he did with his, but Grandpa said when his dad found out about that, he said, "Luke Triplett, I'll never let my son go nowheres else with you. You're going to lie to me." They wagoned a lot, and Grandpa's and some in Dad's day, and my grandfather said that once he went with my Uncle Thomas Miller, that married Grandfather's sister, down here to Hickory with a wagon load of produce one fall, hams and molasses and all kinds of dried fruits and whatever they could preserve around the farm, you know, that they could haul and sell. And he said on the way back, they stopped and made a camp. They made a two-day trip out of coming to Hickory and back from up where we lived. And they made a camp at night, and the next morning they heard some kind of a funny sound down by the river, and they went down there, and somebody had shot at a crane. There was plenty of whooping cranes back then, and it had broken its wing. Well, they caught the thing and put it in the provision box in the back of the wagon, thinking they'd take it home and keep it and put it in a cage to talk about, you know, and maybe its wing would heal and eventually probably let it go. And he said they were going up the road, and all at once that crane, it starts whooping right big and scares the team half to death, and here they go. And he can't stop the team, and there's gates across the roads then, dividing each farm, you know, and whatnot. And they couldn't get it, the team stopped, and the tongue of the wagon that went up between the two oxen caught that big gate and just took it out of the way, and the team ran their scare out and stopped. And Grandpa said he looked around at my Uncle Thomas and said, "Are you going to go back there and see that man about that getting?" "No," he said, "he's liable to shoot us." And said, "Let's keep going." Now, here's a little old song about courting, and I'm not going to pick now. I promised the man I wouldn't pick a lick on the guitar. I will tonight at the concert. A song about girls, the way it used to be, and courting, and the wagoner's lad, who was a poor boy, had no money. The girl was, parents were very wealthy, but she loves the boy, and they are talking scandalously about the boy because he's poor, and he doesn't like it at all. He's mad at the whole world over it. The song's called "The Wagoner's Lad." The heart is the fortune of all womankind. They're always controlled controlled by their parents until they are wives, then bound to their husbands the rest of their lives. I will tell of a girl whose fortune is set. She's always been courted by the wagoner's lad. He's courted her daily, by night and by day, and now he is loaded and going away. Your parents don't like me because I am poor, and they say I'm not worthy to enter your door. I work for my living, my money's my own, and folks that don't like me can leave me alone. Go put up your horses and feed them some hay. Come and sit down here by me as long as you can stay. My horses ain't hungry, they won't eat your hay. So fare thee well, darling, I'll be on my way. Your wagon needs greasing, your whip is to mend. Come and sit down here by me as long as you can. My wagon is greased, my whip's in my hand. So fare thee well, darling, no longer I'll stand.
When my dad was about 18 years old, he was about 16, and my Aunt Isabel, Dad's oldest sister, married Joey Sanders. I think the English call it Saunders, but we always called it Sanders. First, I'll tell you a little bit about Joey's family background. There was the man when he was a young fellow growing up, and Dad was much smaller, much younger than Joey. Well, enough till when Joey was in his middle and late teens, Dad was 7 or 8 years old, you know, big enough to be taken along squirrel hunting or something with an older man that was responsible. Dad said that Uncle Joey was the most gentle man with children. He was a loving character. He's full of devilment, like all young fellows are, you know, like to get into fistfights and foolishness like that. But he was really good with children, and Dad said he used to take him on hunting trips for squirrels or whatever, and if he got tired, he'd pick him up on his shoulders. Joey was a big, tall man, like my son Merle was. And Joey married Aunt Isabel, and by the time they had three children, something had begun to get wrong with his mind. He'd get into rages, and in 5 minutes, he would cry and beg Aunt Isabel not to leave him. The jealous raging was something fearful. And the background was Joey's mother was hopelessly insane by the time he was, a young man grown, and was died over at Morganton over here. And it was inherited, evidently, but Uncle Joey's came out, violent, you know, terribly violent. Well, Aunt Isabel took the three children and left him and went back to my grandfather's, and she wouldn't live with him anymore, and he divorced her. And then he married a widow, Julie Tribbett. She was a Watson, one of those ornery Watsons like Doc, you know. And like my Aunt Isabel, too. But Aunt Isabel loved Joey. She really did. Because I've heard her talk about him many times. What I'm leading up to is a ballad that I wrote, if I can remember all the words to it, about the tragedy. And Joey didn't get along too well with the widow that he married the second time, and she ran him off. I mean, she didn't leave home. She sent him packing. And he was shrewd in his insanity. He figured a way to scare her and her mother out of that house that they had lived in. And on her way, with two lawmen, she was so scared of Joey, with two lawmen walking, one on either side, a deputy and the sheriff of Luckyville, in 1909, he shot and killed her with a shotgun from barely at the bank of the road. This is a true story. I'll just give you all the details. She was 8 months pregnant when he shot her. I told the man a minute ago I didn't know anything but true stories to tell you. And this is the story of my Uncle Joey and what happened. I'll tell you a story that's sad you will find, of a young mountaineer who was gentle and kind. And sadly we ponder and think it so strange how that cruel jealousy caused him to change. He wed his first love, and he called her his bride. But soon from her his madness, she fled from his side. She went with her children to her father's home, and fearing her husband, she stayed there with him. A widow named Julie he then took to wife. But soon of his madness she feared for her life. She thought of her baby who was yet unborn, and knew that if he killed her, its life too was gone. If she'd really loved him and tried to be kind, but not understanding his poor tortured mind, with a heart full of hatred she drove him from home, not knowing by this she would hasten her doom. She went to the sheriff and asked for his aid. Her life had been threatened and she was afraid. Oh, hide me from Joey, for I fear him so. He surely will kill me, and this thing I know. Between the two lawmen walked Joey's poor wife, seeking protection for her very life, not knowing that death waited close by the way, that a blast from a shotgun would kill her that day. The fatal shot was fired from the wooded roadside. In the dust of the roadway there poor Julie died. Shocked for a moment, the two men stood as one, fearing the murder this madman had done. When Joey killed Julie, the people all say that the sheriff pursued him as he ran away. Then on down the holler, a second shot was heard. He had killed another, the sheriff then feared. But when they found Joey, he'd blown out his brain. And too late they knew that the man was insane. And they could do nothing to bring back the life of this poor man or his baby and wife. On two empty shell casings lying on the ground, in bold handwriting, these few words were found. Amazing grace, how sweet it will sound when Joey and Julie sleep under the ground.
The first Thursday night in each month, I used to play at the Soldiers' Veterans Hospital in Johnson City, Tennessee. And I met a fellow out there named Claude Wilburn from over near Asheville up here. And he told me a tale that he deemed was the truth. Now, I can't vouch for the truth of this, but I'll pass it along to you. It'll give you a nice chuckle. There was a Mr. Bob Johnson lived up there between Hendersonville and Asheville in the early 30s. That was during the Depression years. And he had a whole raft of boys, two oldest named Jack and Joe. Jack's a big tall boy, about way up there tall. And Joe wasn't much taller than that mic is from the floor. But they got along wonderful as friends. That Joe was about as stout as a mule, even if he was short. He was muscled. And they did a lot of hard work together. Did a lot of courting trips on Saturday nights. Had a little team model they traded hound dogs and whatnot and got a hold of. And they was going down the road one Saturday night, and the moon was shining pretty bright, and they came up with this farmer's hog lot. There was 15 or 20 big Schultz in there, and old Jack looked over at Joe, and he said, "Son, let's get out here and get us one of them hogs and take him home, butcher him up. I ain't had a bite of pork on my plate in a month of Sundays." And Joe looked over and kind of grinned. He said, "Well, Jack, I guess we could, son." They got out there and got that pig up in that car between them because it didn't have a one seat, and that's the only place they had to haul him. That Joe, you know, that Joe, he was a farm boy in the true sense of the word. He knowed the ways of hogs. He scratched that old pig behind the ear. Old pig, he snuggled right down that seat and got quiet, you know. They turned the curve. I said, "The sheriff's car parked by the road." Jack said, "Son, he's been accusing me of bootlegging. What the devil are you going to do with your hog? You know he's going to stop me." He said, "Well, I know that, but you can't run him. He might as well have gone down there." And Joe pulled his cap off and set her down on that pig's head, you know. Sheriff, he waved them down. They stopped, and he said, "What's your name?" And Jack said, "Sheriff, Humbleman Bob Johnson. Boy, Jack, I'm old as a boy. I live right here on the hill." "Yeah, believe it or you, son." He went around the other side, and he said, "Well, what's your name?" And
he said, I'm Joe Johnson. I'm Jack's brother."
"Well," he said, "yeah, believe I know you too." And he held his lantern up and seen that pig's nose sticking up from under that cap on there. And he said, "Well, what's your name?" And Joe kind of hunched that pig with his elbow. And old Hawk said, "Oink." Well, the sheriff looked kind of puzzled. And he said, "Well, go on, boys, and behave yourselves tonight now." And when they drove away, he looked at his deputy. And he said, "Son, I have traveled a many a mile in this old world and been a lot of different places. But I'll be darned if Oink Johnson ain't the ugliest man I have ever seen." Now, I'll tell you a strange story that my grandmother told me. There was a young couple that got married one fall, and they built them a little small log cabin. And on up the road from them, there was a very sweet old lady that really loved the boy as though he were her own. And the young girl, oh, she was a wonderful person and was really good. They called both of them called her grandma. And they,
the girl was really good to her and went and helped her a lot around the house when she'd be sick or ailing a little bit, and helped her with a lot of her housework and whatnot. She got real sick the next year, and she told the boy and the girl that she wanted them to come over. She had something to tell them. And when they got there, she said, there's something I want to give you tonight, and in the morning I've got another surprise for you. She gave him a deed to her house. It's a big, fine house. Her husband had left her. Really fine for that day. And the next morning, they stayed with the older lady that night. And the next morning, she was dead. She passed on in her sleep. Well, they never knew what the surprise was, but they went to her lawyer. Yes, he said, the will and everything's been made. The house is yours and the land, everything she had. Well, they lived there for the rest of that summer and along late that fall. They noticed, though, after Grandma died, her cat was gone, a big black cat. He wasn't there anymore. They never saw the cat again for all the summer. In the late fall, they were sitting by the fireplace. The cat came in, and he'd look up at the wife and then the husband, and it'd wow, and it'd scratch at the edge of the hearthstone and look up at him. And it scratched at the edge of the hearthstone, and they just thought it was just the cat's behaving strangely, you know. For three or four nights, it did that in a row. And he got to looking down, and he could see that that hearthstone had been broken away from the mortar joint around it where it had been put down. The last time the cat did that, he got the poker and got it wedged in there and raised that section of the hearthstone up, and there sat a whole little cooking pot, a gallon, I guess, almost full of gold coins. And the cat never reappeared. My grandmother told me that tale as the good Lord's truth. She said she knew the people. So I suppose it really happened. You know, sometimes I think the reason things like that, this is my opinion, mind you, I think the reason things like that don't happen this day and time, I've wasted a whole lot of time running my mouth. I think the reason things don't happen this day and time that are really bizarre and strange and unusual, we're too skeptical. And this, we're all too big of skeptics, most of us are, you know. And we wouldn't believe them if it did happen. You reckon? I got one more fun tale I got to pass along to you. But now, I won't swear this is the truth. I'll tell it in first person, but y'all can take it or leave it. I ran into an old boy two or three years back in the late fall. It's getting real chilly. And he says, Doc Watson, me and you ain't played no good music together in years. He says, I guess it's been 30 years since I've picked with you. Why don't you go home with me and spend the night and we'll pick some? I said, buddy, I believe I'll do that. Went over to the car and got my old guitar out. We got down there, he'd built him a fine new log house. He'd made them logs feel like they was weathered 100 years on the outside, but he had her all slicked up inside with nice paneling and all that good stuff. But it was designed like one of the better old-time log cabins. A great big affair for the living room with a big king-size bed way back in the corner and nice closets and a little offset section for the little lady's kitchen. We sat around the fire and picked till she got supper about ready. She called us to come on to the table. Now, I know that most of you here in this little gathering this evening have, well, you have two or three foods that when you're really hungry, I mean starved, that you really like to eat. Well, two of mine, or three of them, would be cornbread with pinto or navy beans and a big slab of ham cooked in them beans. Well, now, she had pintos and cornbread cooked with that good ham meat on that table, along with a lot of other good trimmings, apple pie and all that good stuff. And I was ashamed to eat more than a fourth of what I wanted. Tried to use what little table manners Mom had learned me, you know. After supper, we went back to the fire and sat down, and we picked way long down the shank of the evening. He says, Doc, I got to work tomorrow. I guess we better go to bed. And I said, son, I noticed in that closet there's a great big stack of homemade quilts and some good pillows in there. Hand me about four of those quilts, and I'll make me a pallet right here on the floor in front of this fireplace and sleep just like a pig in a bed of leaves. He says, well, you can do that if you want to, but that'll be king-size bed, so why just sleep in front of us? We'll never know you there. And I said, well, I ain't used to that kind of thing. I guess I could. Well, we was about ready to go to sleep when his little beagle hounds took all the splinters off the little back porch. They heard something growl up next to his pig lot. And that old boy jumped out of there and into them boots and breeches, and he grabbed that shotgun as he went out the door. I heard him check it to see if it was loaded. Yep, I'll get that black bear this time. Gravy, he's going to get one of my little pigs if I don't. When him and them dogs went all the way out of here and up through the woods, that little lady leaned over and said, now's your chance if you won't waste no time. Well, I'll guarantee you folks one good sweet truth. By the time he got back, I'd eat up all them beans and bread and hid the bowl.
With love, as I walk with the heavenly God. sound. People say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load six.
A massive thanks to the producers of Overhome, Taylor Barnhill and Sheila K. Adams, for all the incredible documentation and preservation work that they did. You can find the entire archive, including performances of ballad singing, old-time fiddle tunes, Cherokee oral traditions and dances, Irish jigs and reels, ghost stories, Civil War stories, and moonshine tales, at the link in the show notes. Also, a huge thanks to WCW, and specifically Director of Programming, Joe Kendrick, for introducing me to Overhome. You can find links to all the great work that WCW does, including working with this program, at the link in the show notes as well. Thank you so much to our community on Patreon for keeping this show going. If you'd like to support this independent program for as little as a dollar a month, visit patreon.com/AmericanSongcatcher, where you can find links in the show notes. Our intro song is Payday by Mississippi John Hurt from the Today album. The outro song is 16 Tons, performed by Tennessee Ernie Ford, originally written by Merle Travis. This episode was produced and edited by myself, Nicholas Edward Williams. In the words of Doc Watson, you have to be yourself, otherwise, people won't know who you are. Here's to the songs of old. May they live on forever. See you next time on American Songcatcher.
If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.